This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Well, we turn now to a very serious issue affecting your health, and it's something that many of us worry about at some point in our lives, having a heart attack or suffering from cardiac arrest. The term heart attack is often mistakenly used to describe cardiac arrest. And a heart attack may cause cardiac arrest and sudden death, but the terms don't mean the same thing. According to the Heart and Stroke Foundation, nearly 14,000 Canadians died of a heart attack in 2012, and each year 40,000 Canadians suffer cardiac arrest. Sudden cardiac arrest causes death if it is not treated within minutes. So we are going to talk about all of this with our resident medical expert. Our house doctor, Zachary Levine, is joining us to talk about heart attacks, cardiac arrest, and how we can prevent them. Hi, Dr. Zach.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Good. So yeah, it's a very important topic, and I thought we'd start with cardiac arrest just to clarify what it is. And of course, you know, it's an interest of mine just because I work in the emergency department. And I teach people how to do CPR and ACLS, which is advanced cardiac life support, so how to try and save someone's life when their heart stops. But ultimately, so number one, I just wanted to bring it up so people are aware of it and that people get trained and are interested in getting trained and learn more about it, because the more people who know how to deliver effective CPR, the better all of our chances of surviving if we have a cardiac arrest. And then we can move more into by far the most common cause of a cardiac arrest, which is heart attack, as you said. So cardiac arrest basically means effectively your heart is not pumping. It means your heart has stopped. Now, it's possible that your heart is moving in a certain way, something called ventricular fibrillation, but basically it's not effectively pumping blood. It could be shaking and what medical people call fibrillating, but ultimately it's not pumping any blood, and ultimately that is our lifeline. You know, we need blood to be circulating at all times throughout our body to bring it the oxygen and to bring the different nutrients that we need, including the heart. So the heart attack is when the heart itself is not being supplied with blood that has oxygen and nutrients. And then, you know, stroke is when the brain is not being supplied with the nutrients, and that can be from a blockage. But if the heart itself stops and doesn't deliver any nutrients, oxygen, and blood to the rest of the body, well, then everything begins to die, and within a few minutes, we are dead. So one of the things that has been seen, and they're doing some good studies, actually, a doctor named Laurie Morrison is running some studies out of Toronto right now about resuscitation. And right now, because survival rates, you may have seen when you were looking, are pretty low. If your heart stops and no one gets to you, especially if you're alone and no one gets to you, no one knows how to do CPR, the survival rate for having a cardiac arrest is 10% or lower.
Okay. But now, if you know, you often hear that unfortunately somebody has died of a heart attack. Is it usually cardiac arrest that actually caused their death?
Ultimately, yes. I mean, I guess one could say that every death is cardiac arrest, because eventually something that happens when you die is that your heart stops. However, it's not always the first thing. However, in this case, with the heart stopping, by far the most common cause is having a heart attack. And having a heart attack means a part of the heart dies because it's not being supplied with blood. Usually there's a blockage in one of the arteries. And then the heart, as a result, is not able to pump effectively, and sometimes not able to pump at all. And so when it stops pumping at all, what we try and do is that the only two things, honestly, that have really been proven to be effective are good quality early CPR, so that's pushing on someone's chest 100 to 120 times a minute, and defibrillating them. So that's why those automated defibrillators are available now in a lot of public places, including malls, and whatnot, and because that's actually the most effective thing you can do, because most cardiac arrests, the majority of cardiac arrests, when we say the heart isn't pumping anymore, are actually this thing called ventricular fibrillation, which, like I said, is just the heart is basically shaking and quivering, and it's basically the electrical signals that cause the heart to pump in an organized fashion are all mixed up. And the way that quite an effective way to reverse that, and really our most effective way, is defibrillation, which is delivering a high amount of electricity to the heart to basically resets it.
How do you use those defibrillators?
Yeah, so basically the automated ones, which are the ones you'll find basically in malls and public places, they should have pretty clear instructions, but ideally you'll have looked at them. Even online, you can take a look at how to do it. Basically, there are two pads. You put one pad in, depending on the model, it can either be right in the middle of the chest, one pad, and one in the back, or one pad right in the middle of the chest and one in the side, just under the left underarm area, the left axilla. And then basically you turn on the machine, you just press the on button, and the machine will do the rest in terms of it will check the heart's rhythm, and it will instruct you as to whether or not a shock should be given based on its interpretation of the rhythm, and it will say deliver shock, and then it'll be up to you to press the button based on that. So it's the only steps are opening up the machine, putting on these pads, and pressing on, and then it will instruct you as to whether or not you can deliver a shock or not, because some rhythms, unfortunately, are not amenable to shocking. They don't. People's hearts won't respond to that. So it's only a couple of specific rhythms, but ventricular fibrillation, which is the most common cause of cardiac arrest, is one of those rhythms that will respond to cardioversion or defibrillation, I should say.
Okay, Zach, I'm just going to give the numbers out again. 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-744-740. I'm on the line with our house doctor, Zachary Levine. We're talking about cardiac arrest and heart attacks. And Zach, you were just talking about atrial fibrillation. Now, this is something that is really common with Zoomers. And it's something that people control more or less. And how do you know you have it? And what are the things you can do about it?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, because you're absolutely right. It's very, very common. You know, I mean, I don't know the numbers offhand. It would be easy to find out. But it's by far the most common arrhythmia. And so what does it mean? So basically, the heart is composed of four chambers, the two atria, the smaller chambers, and the two ventricles, the big chambers that contract, the left ventricle being the one that pumps to the entire body. And so fibrillation just means kind of shaking. It means there's no organized electrical activity. Normally, you have a pacemaker in the heart called the SA node, and it basically pumps somewhere between 60 and 100 times a minute very regularly, and that gives us our regular pulse. However, in a lot of people, and there are different reasons for it. The most common, again, is coronary artery disease, but other reasons include issues with the valves, and other issues, that including alcohol. Some people will get atrial fibrillation from drinking a fair bit.
But you can get it from caffeine, I think. Can you?
Yeah, so different stimulants, yeah, if you have a lot. Now, the good thing about those cases usually are, like, short-lived. You know, so, like, when I was talking about alcohol, there's something called holiday heart. Doctors refer to it. So people go on a binge, basically, of alcohol and other stimulants, like you were mentioning, caffeine. That can give you this atrial fibrillation. And basically, it just means the atria, it's not pacing regularly, but you're still effectively pumping blood. But the problem with it is, if your heart isn't beating regularly, you're at an increased risk of forming clots. And clots are good if you want to stop bleeding, but they're an enemy within your bloodstream, because they can cause other things. They cause blockages, including stroke. So stroke is the big fear with people with atrial fibrillation. And so that's why we either thin the blood or we try and revert people back into a regular rhythm. And to answer your question, how do you know? Pardon me. Some people don't know. That's the truth is, some people don't know, and they only find out when their doctor takes their pulse or when they have a routine electrocardiogram. The people who do know, usually it's because the heart's going too fast from the fibrillation, and so they get the most common symptom would be palpitations, so you're basically feeling an uncomfortable feeling of your heart beating either quickly or very strongly. That's what people usually feel. And in those cases, they come in, we do an electrocardiogram, and then we determine what the best way to treat it is. And I'll just make one distinction, which is there's the atrial fibrillation, which again is very common, and it does confer a risk of stroke over years. So depending on what your risk factors are, if you don't treat atrial fibrillation, in general, the risk is about 5% a year of having a stroke. So I don't confuse people, VFib, which is just short form for ventricular fibrillation, is when the ventricles are fibrillating and shaking, and that is not as benign. Not that AFib is totally benign, but VFib is not an effective rhythm. So basically, VFib is the most common cause of cardiac arrest because you're not pumping blood at all with VFib.
Okay, Zach, we have to take a break. So before we go, we're talking about heart issues. We're talking about cardiac arrest, heart attack. You know, some people don't even know if they've had a heart attack. We're talking about atrial fibrillation, which is something that is really common in Zoomers. And we have Dr. Zach here, and he is ready to take your questions on that. And you can ask him other things. He's an emergency doc, so he knows about all kinds of medical conditions. Before we go to break, the numbers to call, 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740. And we will be back with Dr. Zach after this.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. I have our house doctor, Zachary Levine, on the line. We are talking about some very serious heart issues, cardiac arrest, heart attack, atrial fibrillation, and he is taking your calls on those and other issues. We've got Charles in Markham. Hi, Charles.
Hi. Hi there. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, fine. Thank you. I'd like to ask Dr. Zach a question.
Sure.
I think I have atrial fibrillation,
yeah.
And I had a pacemaker put near my heart.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was last year. And this year in July, I got a seizure. You know.
Oh wow. Okay.
A seizure, and to take me in an ambulance to the doctor, and an emergency, and. I don't know what's the reason for the seizure, but I like to know: is there anything that I can do or to prevent it? Or I got to go and see another doctor tomorrow.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
it's a good question, Charles, and definitely worth asking. And I'm actually a bit surprised, or I hope that if you didn't get more information that you will get more information tomorrow because, yeah, having a seizure is obviously something serious and investigations have to be done as to why it happened so that you can prevent it happening again. If you're wondering if it's related to the atrial fibrillation and the pacemaker, it's not likely. People can have, if the heart is not pumping effectively, what will happen is you won't get enough blood supply to the brain and you will pass out. And some people will have a few beats of a seizure when they pass out. That's different from an actual seizure because a seizure is a proper seizure by definition is something that's coming from the brain. It's coming from this extra electrical activity in the brain, and that usually it needs to be diagnosed either with a CAT scan or an MRI or an EEG where they look at the electricity in the brain. So there may be some relationship there, but yeah, I would say you absolutely need to get more answers as to what the cause of the seizure is. And that comes with doing a few other tests. It's most likely not related to the heart condition.
Oh, I see. Okay, because I'm going for the EEG test tomorrow.
Good. See, that's perfect because they have to. That's where they figure out what the cause was. You know, something caused you to seize. I mean, things happen for a reason, and it may be that there's a little part of the brain that is acting up. It just has basically you get these. We all have these electrical impulses in the brain, but if you have a whole bunch in a motor area, it causes your body to move and you can't control it. And the EEG can show, number one, if that is what's happening, and number two, exactly where it is, and then they can control it with medication. Sometimes they'll actually do a procedure to ablate or burn that little area so you don't have seizures. But I'm glad you're getting that follow-up.
Yeah, the doctor has prescribed me, for to prevent the seizure, a tablet known as Keppra.
Yes, yes.
Keppra.
Yeah,
so
that's
take
one of the
twice, once in the morning, one at nighttime.
Yeah, that's one of the more modern anticonvulsant medications. And so they definitely think you had a seizure. Now they have to figure out, you know, what the cause of it is and if and what the best treatment for it is. And it doesn't sound like they think it's from your heart, because they wouldn't put you on an anticonvulsant, anti-epilepsy medication if they thought it was related to your heart issue.
Oh, I see. Okay. But before the pacemaker, I had what you call it, a TIA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that has to do with, it is certainly related to atrial fibrillation, TIA, because when your heart isn't beating regularly, you do have more risk of forming blood clots. And so sometimes a tiny, tiny little blood clot will get up to the brain and cause a TIA, which is basically, we call it a mini stroke. It's basically just, it's not mini, it's a temporary stroke. So people have the symptoms of a stroke because an area of the brain isn't working, but they resolve within a few hours, within 24 hours by definition.
Okay, Charles, thanks for your call. We have other callers waiting.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we've got Tony in Toronto. Hi, Tony.
Yes, Libby, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Okay, and I'd like to ask Dr. Zach a few questions.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I experienced a couple times fibrillating.
Yeah.
Usually after about 8-10 hours goes away.
Uh-huh, right.
Yes, and once actually I went to the hospital and they told me that they gave me some literature saying that most of the time you don't have to be hospitalized or go to the emergency because they usually all go away by itself.
Mm.
But at what point should I go to the hospital if having a reoccurrence?
It's a great question, Tony. And are you having it? How often do you get the episodes of fibrillation?
I had one past September, and this past month I had a couple times. You know.
Okay. And one other question: Did they give you a Holter monitor? One of those monitors that.
I had that done, and I had the whole thing done. But
okay.
They gave me this drug, metoprolol.
Yes.
And what I did, the last time I was at the Women's College, they told me if it happens again to take about 12 milligrams every 6 hours. You know, how would you?
Yeah. Okay. Well, so to answer your question, certainly if it ever persists, there's no amount of time that is agreed upon in the literature. If ever you're getting other symptoms, including chest pain, shortness of breath, nausea, dizziness, sweating, any of those symptoms.
Well, like you mentioned, doctor, I get a little bit, it gets you a little bit edgy.
Yeah.
Not so much of chest pain or anything like that, but very uncomfortable, because the rhythm is not there,
Yeah, absolutely. And, I would say if it's happening more frequently, what you were saying earlier, it's actually quite a debate these days among doctors and cardiologists specifically. Some people feel like we should be treating people with paroxysmal atrial fibrillation, which is what you have, which basically means it comes and goes. We should be treating them more aggressively because maybe you're having a lot of episodes that you're not aware of, and maybe you're at higher risk than we think. So I would say, do you have a follow-up coming up with your cardiologist by any chance?
Well, I probably have to make an appointment, and I was done.
Can I interject with a question before we take our next caller? I know of some people who have had this treated by that procedure you mentioned, ablation, where they find the spot that's responsible. I don't really understand how that works, and they burn it, and it's gone. So at what point should people be asking for that procedure?
Well, I think, I don't think there's any reason not to ask for it and not to ask. In some people, it may not be possible depending on the location, but there's no harm in asking your doctor, am I a candidate for that? Especially if the doctor's saying, you're going to need to go on strong medications, including a blood thinner for the rest of your life. Yeah, obviously, there's no harm in saying, listen, am I a candidate for ablation before we go on to this very serious medication for the rest of my life? It's worth it. Because they do electrophysiological studies, and they can see where the problem is with the electrical conduction system. And like you're saying, if they can burn the right spot, then hopefully they can prevent the atrial fibrillation from happening ever again. So it's definitely something worth bringing up with your doctor. And Tony, I think you should see your cardiologist again.
Oh, definitely. I probably make an appointment and to see one.
Okay, Tony. Thanks a lot. We have some callers waiting, and good luck with your appointment.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Okay, we've got Desmond. Hi, Desmond.
Hi, Mary. Good morning.
Good. Hi. It's good afternoon. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Could I speak to Dr. Zuck?
Sorry?
Yes, sir.
Could I speak to Dr. Zuck?
You're speaking to him.
Yes. Dr. Zuck, I would like to find out what's caused reptile dysfunction.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. You know, it's funny because even though it seems it's unrelated, it is related. So erectile dysfunction,
yes.
I'm sure most people have heard of it. It's basically the problem is with the amount of blood and the blood flow and the circulation to the penis.
Yeah.
And so it is a circulatory problem, which is exactly what we're talking about. Now, it usually doesn't come from the heart itself. It's usually more local, like the area of the penis, the blood vessels are not able to open up enough, and it may be related very commonly to atherosclerotic disease, which is this blockage within blood vessels, which can happen anywhere. It's, by the way, it's not a problem just in your heart or just in your brain or just in the penis. It's a systemic disease if you have these plaques on your arteries. And so it's related to all the different things that cause atherosclerosis, and those things being smoking, diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and family history as well as being, you know, a sedentary person or obesity. And I think, hopefully you know, Desmond, there are effective treatments, but the point is you have to figure out exactly, ideally, what the cause is first. Because if it's a vascular problem, then the medications that we've heard of, like Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, those are effective. But there are other causes, and those medications won't be effective if it's not a circulation problem. Although in most cases it is. So it's definitely something very treatable though these days, and I would encourage you to see your doctor and get it figured out so it can be treated.
Well, right now I haven't got a family doctor because my family doctor retired.
Oh, yeah.
About a year ago now, and I haven't got a direct family doctor.
Oh, yeah, that sucks. I'm sorry about that. But certainly you can still go to a clinic. I would go to a walk-in clinic. Sometimes they can certainly, even if you're not able to have a family doctor, they can order tests. They can do some blood tests and try and figure out what the cause is and treat it. Ideally, of course, you'll get a family doctor eventually, but in the meantime, just go to whatever clinic you can because, like I said, it's very treatable.
Okay, because I remember sometime in 2006, I got to Sunnybrook Hospital, and this doctor told me that I didn't have a blood clot.
Mm.
So they gave me some like a plastic tubing in the vein to clear the blood clot.
Yes.
But the thing still bothered me. I can't get to the final point of it, what caused the problem.
Yeah.
Because the doctor told me that I have high cholesterol.
Yeah.
And I have a touch of blood pressure.
Uh-huh. So anything you can do to improve those things will improve the other things that we're talking about.
Yes.
And I understand, I hear your frustration about not having a doctor. It's very common around my parts as well. But in the meantime, go to whatever clinic you can, and at least you can see a doctor, and they can do some testing and help you out.
Okay, Desmond, good luck with that. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, Nora in Fergus.
Good afternoon, Libby and Dr. Zach.
Hi.
My doctor has told me I have a heart murmur, and my mother also had that. Would you be able to tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So heart murmur is a sign. So basically when a doctor listens to the heart, there are some normal sounds, which are the normal pumping of the heart. And then if there's sort of a humming or a blowing sound, we call that a heart murmur. Now, it's just a descriptor, and what it doesn't tell you or me or anyone at all is whether it's something significant or not, in the sense of if it's important or dangerous, because many people have heart murmurs. And one thing I should say that's good, Nora, is that at least you know about it, because very frequently when I see someone for the first time, I'll listen to their heart and I'll say, you have a heart murmur, you aware of that. And it's very helpful when they say, oh, yeah, I've had that for 20 years. My doctor told me it's nothing to worry about, et cetera, et cetera. If it ever comes up, the reasons we worry about it are there are certain types of murmurs that we worry about more, and certainly if it comes up if you have a neuro murmur associated with other heart conditions, like you're having chest pain or shortness of breath, and suddenly you have a murmur, that's concerning. Now, if there's concern about it, and this is your doctor and you can decide about this, if there's concern about whether it's a benign versus a serious heart murmur, then the test to do is an echocardiogram, which is just an ultrasound of the heart, where they look at what's causing it. And basically, I didn't say what causes it, but any kind of flow that is not smooth will cause it. So if there's a valve that's a little bit sticky, so the blood kind of doesn't rush through it as cleanly, if things aren't, or sometimes it's just the makeup of your heart. Like I said, some people have it their entire lives and it's nothing serious. And the only way really to know is to do this ultrasound, take a look at the heart, and then they can say, okay, you know, your mitral valve has a little stenosis, or there's many, many different things that it could be. So if your doctor's not worried about it, then that's a very good thing, and it's also very good that you know about it. But if there's any concern, an ultrasound is the way to know exactly what's causing it.
Thank you. I can't feel it. I can't hear it. And my mother was 96, and I'm 89.
Good for you. That's great.
Thank you very much, Doctor. And Lydia.
Okay. Thanks very much. All right. We are basically out of time. We've got less than a minute left. Zach, your parting thoughts on this?
Well, you know, my main thing is, you know, if take things seriously. The classic symptoms for heart attack are that sort of squeezing chest pressure, shortness of breath, dizziness, sweating. But especially in women, it may not be that way. You may just feel weak or fatigued, dizzy, sometimes jaw pain or back pain. So take these things seriously if they're severe and they're not going away. And I would really encourage people to look up CPR and learn about it. And you know, if you think it's not a bad idea to have one of those AEDs in your house if there's people with that you're worried about, because you could really save a life.
Uh-huh. And certainly to have it at your workplace and maybe sign up for those. You know, I know they post, we're giving a course on this, so maybe learn how to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, because it's scary. I mean, if you don't know what you're doing, it's scary. And it's scary even if you know what you're doing. It's only after you've done it a few hundred times that, you know. So the more you can practice it and the more you can get comfortable with it, the better.
Okay. Zachary Levine, Dr. Zachary Levine, our house doctor, thank you so much for that.
Thanks, Libby. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that is it for Fight Back for today.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.